And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, the parties are reorganizing. At least they're reorganizing in the Congress. New leadership for the Democrats, new leadership for the House Republicans. The Democrats are reorganizing the way they're going to do their primaries for the presidential election in 24. And there are big changes because on the Democratic side, all the leaders of the past 20 years have stepped down. New people have taken their place. What do you think?
Yeah, certainly we went from the octogenarians in the Democratic Party to a generation younger, except for that one post that Jim Clyburn slid down from number three to like number four. That's where they are. And the interesting thing for us in northeastern Pennsylvania is that there's a new leadership post called Battleground Leader that Matt Cartwright is vying for. He's got a tough competitor in Abigail Spanberger, who's just reelected.
No, he was just reelected too?
I know he was just reelected. She was one of those races, although both of them were supposed to be in difficult races. Hers was more difficult, but she held on in Virginia. That's the one thing. So the Democrats know who they have and pretty much where they're going. Republicans are in total disarray. Kevin McCarthy, who has sold his soul in order to get himself in position to be the next speaker, may find himself not getting that position.
So he'll be soulless and jobless.
Soulless and jobless, yeah. Which is a reflection on his weakness, why he was selling his soul. You know, he showed no character, no real guts. It was certainly no concern for the benefit of the country as a whole. It was just pandering to the worst elements of his party.
Well, listen, you gotta have some sympathy for him. He's got a problem. Only about 190 of the 220 Republicans in the House are MAGA people. The rest of them are not MAGA people. They may be reactionary. They are reactionary. But they're not fascists like the MAGA people. He has to somehow make a marriage between the two. But the MAGA people are there to get rid of the others. So getting a marriage between the two is not that easy.
No. It could prove to be, in his case, impossible. There are at least five who have said that they won't support him, which takes him under the magic number of 218. And they claim that they have pretty much another couple dozen, which would... We'll have to see who else emerges.
He could still win. I mean, they have a peculiar way of counting these. He only needs 218 on the first ballot. After the first ballot, he just needs the majority of whoever votes. Now, you can't abstain. It's not the total membership of the House. It's who's ever on the floor and votes without abstaining, without casting a present but not choosing vote. You got to choose somebody. So however many people do that all after the first ballot, all you need is a majority of those people. So if he can convince his group, even if he doesn't have 218, even if he's got 40 less, but if he can convince them to keep voting for me, undoubtedly at some point they'll be the majority.
Well, if those five or 25 don't, the Democrats are going to stay united with Hakeem Jeffries. They'll have 213. I mean, he could wind up with Jeffries with 213 and McCarthy with 185.
Then Jeffries wins. If that's the way it is on the third ballot or even on the second ballot, Jeffries wins.
which would be...
What a joke.
You'd hear the Republicans going crazy if that occurs. If that occurs. Meanwhile, that's the...
Who actually runs the election?
That's a question.
Because that's going to be key. Because whoever runs the election, if it's a Republican, can just extend the election. Just, you know, until they argue it out among themselves. But if it's somebody else, he could say, listen, this is the vote. Done.
I'm not sure. But, it's just not going to look good for the Republicans, even if he wins.
Let's go a step further. Let's assume he wins, but it takes him more than one ballot. But, you know, it doesn't take him the, 130 ballots that it took 100 some odd years ago. Won't the Republicans be so factionalized, so bitter with each other, that even though they don't aim to legislate, I mean, they've all announced that they have no intention of legislating, all they want to do is attack Biden, won't they even have trouble doing that?
Well, that's the thing. The one thing they're united on is Hunter Biden, Hunter Biden, Hunter Biden. Then Gazi, she has emails. You know?
Yeah.
And that's what they're going to try to do, is divert people's attention.
No, that's their plan. But if they're angry at each other, how are they going to do even that?
Well, that's the thing. They're going to anger their base by their incompetence. And, I started to say there's another race there in the Republicans, and that's for National Committee Chairman.
That's right. Rona McDaniels. What is she, a niece of Romney's?
Yes.
But she's a cat's paw of Trump's.
Right. She doesn't have her uncle's
horrible politics. She has Trump's horrible politics, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, she's, I don't know if she's on the way out, but people are challenging her, right?
Yeah, of course, we have the MyPillow guy said he's going to challenge her. And there's rumors that Lee Zeldin from New York, who ran a surprisingly strong race against Kathy Hochul, he may be in the mix.
But isn't it a situation where, by rights and by tradition, Trump would decide? I mean, he's the titular head of the party. Doesn't he get to choose who should be the head of the National Committee?
I'm not sure how. There's still
a vote. There's no rule, but isn't that how it works?
That's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah. He's for her. He's in favor of her.
Yeah. As long as she stays loyal to him.
But she has been.
She has been. You know, this week Lou Barletta came out and finally said what needed to be said. You know, he was about Trump. He said, look, I was one of his most loyal and early supporters. And when push came to shove, he was disloyal to me. I mean, everybody else in the world knew that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So what was he complaining about? Who is he backing? What's his story? He's going to back Nikki Haley?
Don't forget we were talking about the Speaker of the House. One unique thing is that the Speaker of the House does not have to be a member of the House.
Right, but he has to, or she has to, want to come to work. So you can't imagine that Trump would do it, because he wouldn't come to work.
No. Well, he's going to be too busy running for president.
That's right.
So you have to... Right.
But you do need somebody, presumably, who can negotiate with these various factions. I don't think that's so simple.
No. No.
First of all, the MAGA people, the Freedom Caucus... What do they have? What reason have they got to negotiate? Why should they negotiate? They have the majority of the rank and file on their side. Right. What is there for them to negotiate?
Well, yeah, and they just keep doubling down and tripling down. You know, remember after Romney lost to Obama, the Republicans went through this autopsy, and they came to a conclusion that they had to broaden their base. They had to be friendlier to women and to minorities. And the report wound up being trashed And they just said, no, we're going to double down on what we're doing. And of course, Trump wound up being president. So they thought that was a successful strategy. They're now going to do another autopsy. And
yeah, but who did they appoint to do the autopsy?
The living dead.
The living dead. Kellyanne Conroy. Conway.
Yeah, Conway, yeah.
Blake Masters.
Yeah.
I mean, and six others just like them. Yeah. Blake Masters couldn't even win his election.
Nope. He's going to be still trying to figure out how he can win it. Who
yeah.
knows?
So, I mean, what?
I'm surprised they didn't nominate Katie Hill.
What's the point of their trying? You mean Lake, Carrie Lake?
Carrie Lake, Lake.
I mean, what's the point of that committee? What do they think they're going to do? Why are they doing it?
You've got me.
All right. This is a party that has no program that they announced, right? When President Trump ran for re-election, they said, we'll do whatever he wants. Well, we don't need to have a program.
Well, they do have a program that they want people to know about. They want to destroy Social Security. Again, it came out this week that they want to hold Social Security hostage to the budget being passed. And they said, you know, unless you're willing to cut Social Security, we're not going to allow a budget to be passed. You know, cut off America's nose to spite their face.
And also Medicaid. And also Medicare.
Right.
What they like to call entitlements.
Yeah.
You don't have a right to live. You have you're entitled, you know, you're getting some kind of handout from rich people to allow you to live.
You know, they've been promoting themselves as the party of the little guy. They say, we're no longer the country club party. We're the party of the little guy. That's their new mantra, okay?
Every single one of them voted to break the railroad workers' strike. Every single one of them, right?
Not only that, because a lot of Democrats decided that they were going to vote to avoid the strike, but at least the Democrats in the House then went on to pass a bill to give the railroad workers what their big objection was, that they have 7 days of sick leave, paid sick leave. When it got over to the Senate, the Republicans killed it.
I don't really understand Biden's, who claims to be the most pro-union president in the history of the presidency. Why couldn't he have called in the owners of the railroads and said, listen, give them the goddamn 7 days? Why did the workers have to take the loss? You know, the biggest share owner of the biggest one of the railroads is Warren Buffett. He controls it.
Yeah.
Right? Warren Buffett in one day, takes in enough money to pay for 15 days of paid sick leave for every single railroad worker in the country. They were asking for 7 days. One day. So the railroads make the money. Why didn't the president call in the heads of the railroads and say, give it to them, or we're going to make life hard for you? But he didn't.
That I don't understand.
The railroad workers are going to remember that in 2 years.
Yeah, although he did get them a 24%
wage. That's right.
Yeah.
But effectively what he's telling workers is you don't have the right to strike. I mean, the whole point of a strike is that you put the economy out of balance. A strike is a form of war. So to say, well, we can't let you strike because you'll put the economy out of balance, that's the whole point of it. Take it away and you take away the workers' only recourse.
You know, we're no longer used to these big, large union strikes.
No.
They used to affect the steel workers or the auto workers, you know, throughout the 40s and 50s. We used to, well, I wasn't around the 40s, but in the 50s, I remember, they used to have these huge strikes in industries.
Well, I remember when Truman threatened
Truman
to nationalize the steel workers.
That didn't earn him
any points. He suffered for that. You want to be the most pro-worker, most pro-union president? When push comes to shove, you got to stand up. Nothing stopped him from telling these. You know how much profit the railroads are making? I mean, unbelievable profits. They didn't suffer because of COVID. They suffer because they laid off all their workers. They have this system where if one worker is absent for one day, they have nobody to fill them in. So they don't let anybody take a day off. They run trains that are literally 3 and 4 miles long that three men control. And they make a fortune doing that. Well, make less money, make less profit, hire more people, and allow people to have what they need, whether they're sick or their families are sick. Yeah, people are working to live. They're not living to work.
Yeah, and the unfortunately, the messaging really wasn't there. It wasn't there to drum up support on a national basis.
No. That's right.
And in some way, the rail industry has gotten to be so efficient that people don't see it. They don't see it. It's just sort of taken for granted.
To tell you the truth, with all the discussions about the disruption of the supply chain, the biggest obstacle in the supply chain in America is the railroads. Because, you know, they have it worked out so that they ship it just when it needs to be shipped on these gigantically long trains. So anything can tie up stuff, and factories or stores can't get what they need because the railroads are just at the edge. And if you get beyond the edge, they don't function. And you always have to get beyond the edge. There are always storms. Somebody gets sick and can't come to work. Something happens. And that really, if you look into it, you'll discover is what's causing most of the supply chain problems.
Yeah.
It's not the Chinese, it's the American railroad owners.
Well, but it's not just in the railroad industry. This was what business has shifted to. Remember, just in time.
Just in time, exactly. Then you lay off workers.
And we don't have, we don't build up inventories, or we don't make things here. We can always get parts from 3 different parts of the world that will just in time come together so that we can do a manufacturing.
Right, right.
And if the chips aren't there, the auto industry shuts down or the appliance industry shuts down.
Yeah, everything shuts down, and then you blame somebody else.
Because all of these companies operate under the libertarian that we only look out for ourselves.
Right.
And there is no national interest.
National interest is my profits. That's the national interest. That's what they really believe.
Yeah. Some things have, I was in courtroom number 3 in Lackawanna County this week. My daughter was admitted to the Lackawanna County Bar. She's already been a Pennsylvania lawyer. And that's
your
the famous
Your daughter is a Pennsylvania lawyer?
Yeah.
Is that a good thing?
I hope it is. I hope it is. It's been very, very good for me. But
for you.
That was the room where John Mitchell and Clarence Darrow took on the coal companies, which were owned by the railroads, basically back in 1903, for the strike that shut down the whole national economy.
That's right. That's what strikes do. That's why they win. It's one set of interests against another, and when the president who claims to be pro union puts his hands on the scale for the companies, that's not being pro union. And you say, well, you know, other union workers would have lost their jobs. Take a look at France, where the transportation workers go out on strike, nobody can get to work, and yet French public opinion supports those strikers because they know that tomorrow they may be in that position because they're also workers.
Yeah, well, that's that's a country where the concept of unions and strikes never went away. In
that's
America,
right.
For the last 40 years, it's ever since the air traffic controllers fiasco.
Well, don't forget that the Taft-Hartley law in the early 50s, late 40s, early 1950s, made strikes illegal in a lot of places. Then you had a purge of union leaders who were leftists because they were organizing too many strikes and they couldn't tolerate that. Then you had labor leaders, so-called labor leaders, who were against striking, who looked upon their job as being partners with the corporation. You had such wonderful partners with the corporation as the current crop of UAW leaders. The current president went to jail. The president before him went to jail. And they're having a UAW election now. And the whole issue is, can we get rid of these crooks whose policy was cooperation with the gas, with the auto companies?
Okay.
And the election is being won by union people who say we're not the partners of the bosses of the factories. We're the workers. We have different interests. They are our antagonists, and they're winning the election. We'll see what happens. They're still counting the votes. But that's the history of American labor for the last 70 years. People who looked upon their job, these so-called labor leaders, actually misleaders, as being partners with the employers. It's impossible. It's impossible. There's $1. Either they get it or I get it, or part of it. But that's what we're struggling for. And in that situation, if the workers can't strike and starve out the bosses, they can't win. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. So there you have it.
There we have it. I want to shift gears a little bit, talking about autos. There's some significant court findings this week, or decisions this week. We had a conviction on the rare charges of sedition of the Oath Keepers leaders. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. These guys were intent on stopping the vote on January 6th. They didn't succeed then, and they didn't succeed in court convincing a jury that what they really were doing was just free speech or benign. And
what they claimed was that they were speaking. They were being tried for speaking. That they didn't have a plan that they had agreed to ahead of time, and what they were doing was talking. And the government said, "Your talk is part of your action. That's how you did your action, by talking and showing up in Washington. So you're not allowed to do that." Now, that is not exactly the civil libertarian's view of free speech. I think it's a good point of view. If you say to kill these people because they're Jews, kill these people because they're black, you shouldn't be allowed to say that. You should be stopped. You're inciting to murder. That's not free speech. And the same with these guys. They were getting up and saying was, dump the votes. That's not proper. That violates the law of elections.
Yeah, well, conspiracy requires not just speech, but at least some overt act towards carrying it out. And they certainly had overt acts.
Well, they were in Washington.
They brought weaponry. They left most of it over the other side of the river there in Virginia. But they had that. They stormed the Capitol. That's an overt act. They broke into the Capitol. That's an overt act.
No, but even Stuart Rhodes, he got convicted. He was one of the two convicted as seditious. He didn't break into the Capitol. He stood outside. He was the one mainly that they convicted because of his speech. That's fine. I'm not against that. I'm not. I believe that your speech is part of your action. Speech, you can't just talk. There's no such thing. Rush Limbaugh, all he did was talk. But Rush Limbaugh was the principal organizer of the fascist movement in this country, right?
Well, he's certainly the organizer of the anti-liberal movement. He made liberal a bad word. He made feminism a bad word.
All of that helped to make Trump's base coherent.
You talk about words, though. I mean, when you have somebody that yells charge and points up the hill, and people do that.
And he doesn't go up the hill, but he yelled charge and points up the hill and people do it. Why shouldn't he go to jail?
Well, he's going.
Well,
for
that's,
up to 20
but that's
years.
The, well, but Trump also did it.
Yeah.
He also should go.
Right.
He says, all I did was speak. That's all you need to do.
Well, Trump had a bad week on that because there's all sorts of rulings that forcing his lawyers or people close to him to testify in a whole bunch of different places. Lindsey Graham has got to testify down south. Some of Trump's lawyers, Cipollone and the others, have got to testify with regard to January 6th. Some of them with regard to taxes. The taxes got turned over to the congressional committee. And of course, the biggest thing that happened with regard to Trump this week was the 11th Circuit investigating, which seems to be the simplest case against him, the stealing of government documents that he had no right to take with him when he left the White House. One of his last appointees, a lame duck section, a 36-year-old woman who was deemed unqualified for the job but got it anyway, who wrote a horrendous opinion, interjecting herself in the government's investigation, and winding up appointing a special master. The 11th Circuit just really slammed her, said she had no business even taking the case, that there was no jurisdiction, that there hadn't been any charges yet filed, that you just can't interfere with the government investigation of potential criminal activity. And it was a good decision for the rule of law. And the interesting part was that the three-judge panel that heard it, two were Trump appointees and one was a Bush appointee.
Why isn't she impeached?
Well, she could be.
Good.
They had the votes, but they don't have the votes.
Well, they don't have the votes. At some point, hopefully, they'll get the votes. Get rid of her.
Well, if she keeps making decisions like this, she may be down that road.
Let's hope so.
The 11th Circuit was sending her a message. They're telling her, you're a young district court judge, and you've really screwed up. You know, you better shape up or ship out. When Trump brought those 60-some cases trying to overturn the election, there were Trump judges who denied his motions and his findings, and they held. This lady went out of her way, and
but that's why they chose her. They knew she would do that.
Yeah, they chose her, and we'll see how chastised she is. They told her dismiss the case. We'll see. He has up until next week to file an appeal. We'll see if she does that. If she doesn't, then she does commit an impeachable offense, and we'll see what happens there on that.
Meanwhile, Trump ended the week, as he always does, with a bang. This time, of course, a stir because he couldn't avoid being an open anti-Semite.
Yeah.
Couldn't avoid it. It's hard for him to avoid it. He is what he is. And although when he was anti-black, when he was anti-Latino, when he was anti-Asian, people were annoyed and people criticized him and people were shocked. But backing a guy who tells you, I think Hitler was pretty good, that's already too much. And that's what this rapper said. I think Hitler did some good things. The only thing Hitler did that was good was commit suicide.
Yeah. Well, Trump, the mighty fine people on both sides.
On both sides. Yeah.
That side.
Yeah.
He plays to that crowd.
He plays to that crowd. He's part of the crowd. That's him. That's him. And you know what? 2/3 of the Republican voters are that way because they vote for him. They vote for him. There are some Republicans who don't like it. They're the small minority.
And a lot of them say they don't like it, but when you ask them, well, will you vote for him again? And
yeah, absolutely.
Like Bill Barr or Mike Pence, they say, well, I might.
Yeah, he's the leader of my party.
Yeah, he's unqualified to be president. He doesn't have the character to be president. Yeah, but against Joe Biden, who's honorable and getting things done, I might vote for him.
I think after this, if the Jewish caucus in the Republican, what is it called? The Republican Jewish
Committee? Coalition.
The Jewish coalition. If they don't all resign, they have shamed themselves in Jewish history. Never mind American history. In Jewish history. Shamed themselves.
Well, one of the one of the hallmarks of the MAGA crowd is that there is no shame.
There is no shame. Well, there is also no time. We're done.
Yep. We have an election in Georgia this week.
That's right. We'll have a lot to talk about next week.
And last week, my daughter had a good thing happen to her. This week, my son has a birthday, so he'll have a good thing happening to him.
Well, congratulations to daughter and son.
All right. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.